So Kyle, I want to ask you, before we officially start here, I'm trying to get to Australia. I've got this ideal itinerary in my mind. Am I shooting for the stars enough? I want to fly up to JFK. I live in DC. I want to fly to JFK, fly the A321T to LA, have enough time in LA to be able to do some lounge hopping, including going to the Qantas first because I've got Emerald, and then fly into any of the main cities in Australia. You know, I'm not picky there, right? I can be flexible. And then the way home, I want to fly to Christchurch on Emirates. I've seen reasonably priced first class Emirates on the A380. We'll have four of us, so that'd be a little aggressive. Spend a day or two in Christchurch, hop up to Auckland, and then fly that Auckland to Sydney nonstop that Qantas started since the pandemic, and then just fly home from JFK. Have I optimized that enough, assuming I have the unicorn to be able to ride up to JFK on?
Yeah, I mean, there's the phrase pie in the sky, and this is, you know, a little bit north of that, I think. I mean, in terms of difficult things to pull off where you're going to feel like Hulk Hogan in the 80s ripping through your shirt, if you were actually to be able to do this, this is up there, right? I mean, this is somehow winding up in Air France La Première territory with all of that. There's a lot going on there. So I applaud you for your enthusiasm for that.
And four seats, right? Right? Four seats?
And oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, family of four. Yeah, sure. No problem.
A little bit of humor before we get into the main show. I just thought that'd be a little fun to see your reaction here.
I remember.
I'm sorry?
But I'm a diamond.
There you go. Slip that. If you call and ask for revenue management and you tell them you're a diamond member, and if you tell them you're wearing nice clothes but they can't see you, I mean, something's got to give at some point.
That's right.
I need them to have room for my giraffe as well. I mean, that's kind of clutch. That's part of the family.
That's one of the four seats. It's actually two, so it's five because, you know, you need one for the legs and then one for the neck and head.
There you go. Yeah, even in the lay flat, I mean, that's almost like half the aircraft. Yeah. Yeah, we got to aim even higher here. Okay, well, let's get into the show. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Trevor Mountcastle and Tom Kim. This episode, we welcome on the one, the only Kyle Potter from Thrifty Traveler. And I should have validated that I got your name right. It seemed like an easy one to get. Did I get it right?
You got it. Nailed it.
Awesome. So Kyle, we've traded messages, we've traded tweets and everything, and never actually had the chance to meet in person. So I remember you had shared a post maybe a month ago, a little less, sort of with this September cliff. And so I reached out because I was always raised as if you don't ask, you don't know. And you were kind enough to come on here. So if I could ask, could you introduce yourself and Thrifty Traveler? And then maybe we could talk about that September airfare cliff.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. So yes, you did get my name right. I am Kyle Potter. I work for Thrifty Traveler, which is a travel flight deal and website. You know, we're based where I am here, where we're recording from in Minneapolis. Got a growing team, north of 20 people now. And I, in my day-to-day, just write a lot of words and edit a lot more words and help the company out. But, you know, our bread and butter as a company is running a flight deal alert service. So cheap domestic fares, $400 fares over to Europe and back. And increasingly, you know, where our focus has been is, you know, award alerts, those dirt cheap economy mileage redemptions, those prized business class and first class redemptions flying overseas or down to South America or down to the land down under. And then the true unicorns, not quite the unicorns of getting across the country in an American A321T and down to Sydney and back, but the stuff that's really hard and that, you know, folks like us three sickos here really love to see.
That's awesome. I get a kick out of that one. Thinking of those unicorns, that new JAL A350, I can't remember whether it's a 900 or a 1000, where they've got, you know, the speakers in the seat. I mean, that's got to be something that a lot of people are pursuing.
It looks incredible. I'm excited to hopefully fly it, knock on wood, in February. It's an exciting time for people like us, right? There is a lot going on, not all of it good. It's never all sunshines and rainbows and roses, but there's a lot to be excited about right now.
I love your optimism. There are days that I have a hard time with that optimism. you know, and I like to be a pretty optimistic person. So for years, I had been calling on this podcast, this September cliff. Gosh, I mean, I think it was pretty much from either 21 or 22. And the thing that jumped out at me was you had posted and you had started to see like a drop either in airfares or bookings. I can't remember which, but you had a pretty stark chart where it did look like things were going down. I think a couple of weeks after, you might have put in a follow-up saying, hey, maybe it's not as stark as I originally thought, but or as you originally thought, I should say. What are you seeing on trends? And do you see a light at the end of the tunnel, I'll say, on the revenue fares? Because I think we'd all agree that the vast majority of revenue fares are just obnoxious compared to 2019 even, let alone 2021. Actually, 2021 was probably actually a lot worse because of revenge travel. But, you know, 2019 is an example.
Yeah. So backing up a little bit, what I started to see, and this was really just in the TSA passenger volume. So every day the TSA puts out the number of people that are traveling through U.S. airport security checkpoints. And so you take that data and you plot it and you average it over a 30-day rolling average. And I started to look at the numbers. And yeah, right around kind of early to mid-September, there was this really drastic drop off, and it was a drop off in passenger numbers that, to be honest, we hadn't seen anything quite that severe since April of 2020. It really was that bad. I mean, it wasn't April of 2020 bad. These are very different benchmarks, but it was a pretty severe and noticeable drop off in the number of Americans who were traveling through airports. And so I kind of threw it out there just as you know what, this is something to watch because we don't know what this is. But what we know is that we haven't seen this kind of a drop off at the same time in years past. Of course, in September, you get the norm of seasonality of people getting the kids back to school, not quite ready to go on those early fall trips or certainly early winter trips. And then you mix in, you know, this year, you know, a slew of horrific storms battering the East Coast, which definitely brought down travel demand. And then an election that had people thinking about staying put because all they had the capacity to think about was the election. So I threw it out there, and you're right. A couple of weeks later, things have rebounded to the point where we're now seeing pretty steady growth yet again in the number of travelers moving through American airports every single day. So, you know, I'm still of two minds about it. On the one hand, travel can't grow forever. We're not just going to continue growing 5 to 10% every year, year over year, until we have 4, 5, 6 million travelers going through U.S. airports every single day. That's just not realistic. Things are going to plateau at some point, but they really haven't yet. And so that's surprising to me.
And how can they even plateau, or not plateau, I should say, with the way that airlines just aren't getting aircraft? I mean, that's the other side. You've got this capacity problem where at some point they're going to have to plateau and those fares are going to just skyrocket unless Boeing and Airbus can get their act together.
Right. You know, it's going to hit an inflection point, and it might happen sooner than we think. You know, to your point, I feel like a lot of Americans look at the airfare market right now and they think we're well past that, because a lot of, you know, the fares that we've seen do seem sky high and feel like it's just so out of the norm compared to 2019. But to circle back on that point you made initially, are some airfares higher? Absolutely. There are some ridiculous prices out there right now. But there's also some ridiculously cheap prices out there. So it's a good reminder that airfare is not a monolith, and that just because you're seeing prices that you don't like for the 2, 5, 6, 10, however many flights you're looking at for travel this year and next, doesn't mean that's what everyone's seeing. So for example, you know, we have seen some just gobsmackingly cheap transatlantic fares through certainly the winter, but even into early spring. And in some cases, even late summer. And we saw some incredibly cheap, I mean, historically cheap late summer European fares just this past summer in 2024 too. So is airfare on the whole, on average, higher than it was this time, you know, 5 years ago in 2019? Yeah, it probably is. But the deals are still out there. So if you're flexible and you use the right tools to find them, it's not like everything is doom and gloom out there.
For me, it feels like there's definitely some regionality, right? So like you mentioned the Europe, like it seems like there's not a route that, you know, a United or a Delta doesn't want to try, whether it be random places in Sicily or random places in Greenland, they just keep adding more and more and more routes. It's like the airline executives never found a Europe route that they didn't want to try. But at the same time, you see kind of some differences. I think domestic market definitely seems to be shaping up a little different. I mean, you hear about all the news headlines with Spirit Airlines, right? You know, almost going bankrupt relatively soon here. They've already cut back a lot of capacity. So you almost wonder if what you're seeing is certain international, you know, kind of be a little bit over capacity and then certain domestic kind of under capacity, right? Because there apparently is a limit to the amount of flights you can fly between, you know, to Orlando and Las Vegas. Although those probably aren't the real markets that aren't seeing very much. I'm sure it's more most of these secondary cities and other places where you're still seeing a lot of good price pressure. And you're not seeing probably the same pressure from the ultra low cost carriers that you once did, you know, even a year or two ago, right? Because they can't be as aggressive anymore.
Yeah. I mean, apparently Italy is the new Phoenix or the new Miami, the way that airlines are adding capacity to these cities over in Europe, right? Here's what I'd say. I think no question the capacity domestically is starting to normalize, but that's coming off the heels of two straight summers, even peak summers of the cheapest domestic airfare we have ever seen. And at prices that are just unbelievable. I mean, in the summer of 2021, you couldn't fly anywhere for less than $500 round trip. In some of those same markets for the last two summers in a row, it's been a quarter of that or less in some cases. So there's a long way for things to go before domestic capacity gets to the point where it is really meeting demand where it's at. So the struggles of Spirit, of Frontier, I mean, name your ULCC, as well as, you know, all of the major, you know, US carriers who are still battling it in these markets, that's going to have to come down, you know, quite a bit more before I would be willing to look at that and say, you know what, those domestic airfares that we've enjoyed for the last two or three years, those are going out the window. I still think we've got some good runway here for cheap domestic travel.
Good to know.
So let's pivot a little bit here. We've talked a lot about the revenue side. Obviously, you, like us, look at the award availability probably every day, probably almost every hour, at least I do. And I have to believe you're probably pretty close or far surpassing me. What patterns are you seeing that we used to know and love that have kind of gone the way of the dodo, so to speak, since, you know, we'll keep the Australia talk in? And then, you know, what new opportunities? Understanding that this game is always about following that bouncing ball and trying to keep up with all the changes.
Yeah, you know, not to use a dirty word, but the award travel space is so dynamic. The only constant is change. And if you're able to follow that change and make it work to your advantage, there's still a lot of opportunity out there. They're not the same opportunities as they used to be, certainly not compared to pre-pandemic, let alone even last year. But there is still good news out there. And you joked about being an optimist. I'm a pessimist. So the fact that I'm sitting here telling you that is, I think, telling that there still is good news, good stories, good opportunities out there if you're open to them. So let's start with some bad news. A lot of the really reliable award space, that entire landscape, the things that people had been booking and knew that they could book, whether it was last minute or, you know, 11 plus months in advance, a lot of that stuff has just completely flipped on its head. So for as long as I can remember, you could book a Japan Airlines first class seat between the United States and Tokyo 14 days out on the dot without a problem. That is non-existent now. That hasn't been available for 2+ years. Two of my favorite redemptions, ones that I would lean on really heavily, one of my favorite airlines, EVA Air, you used to be able to book nonstops to Taipei like clockwork as soon as the schedule opened. They would release two seats on basically every single US to Taipei route to all of their Star Alliance partners. That is no longer available. China Airlines, another Taiwanese carrier, totally evergreen for, you know, most of the last 5-6 years, booking through Air France, even Virgin Atlantic, that no longer exists. And then even more recently, you know, we had a good run for, you know, more than a year of Air France flying blue business class awards to Paris or Amsterdam or onward throughout Europe for 50,000 miles. That has really disappeared. It kind of dried up right over the summer. And you keep going down the list. Iberia business class, you know, those cheap, cheap business class awards you could book for as low as 34,000 miles each way. That's gotten a lot harder. Still out there, but it's nowhere near as reliable as it used to be. Qatar Q Suites, you know, now if you're not booking literally 12 full months out on the dot, odds are you're not going to find anything between the United States and the Middle East. So a lot of the things that people in our worlds had come to rely on for the last several years have just completely changed and flipped on their head. So that's discouraging. And I understand the impulse to say, well, it's not how it used to be. But from my perspective, the entire world and landscape of award travel can be summed up as when one door closes, another one opens. And that's what we're seeing now.
Yeah, I think the demand and or competition for award space that touches the United States, that touches a U.S. gateway, that seems to be one of the most challenging parts of this game now. How do I leave the U.S.? Once you get out of here, it's easy. Suddenly, lots of sweet spots are open to you. Lots of award availability opens up. But the minute you have to leave, you know, the good old, you know, USA first, that seems to be the big challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these big airline loyalty programs have wised up to some of the games that we all play. And probably most importantly, the pool of people that have points to throw at these things and the amount of points that are out there is just so drastically bigger than it was pre-pandemic. Whether you talk about sites like ours, look, we play a part in this. Services like ours, we play a part in driving these trends. But I think most importantly, the rise of the not just individual, but the economy of influencers talking about credit card points and how to redeem them and encouraging their hundreds of thousands of followers to open up credit cards. The entire ecosystem and the number of points out there and the number of savvy people out there has just grown exponentially just within the last few years. So it's a different ballgame now, no question.
Let's pull that thread a little bit. Over the past probably couple of months, we've had two fairly notable people on, Richard Kerr and JT Genter. And they both sort of talked about how we are seeing a lot of these creators, or you used the term and it just escaped me, but essentially these folks on Instagram, on TikTok, etc.
Influencers, maybe?
Influencers. There we go. Yeah. Clearly, I am not an influencer. I don't even know the term.
You're the best kind of influencer then.
Too kind. But, you know, Richard had specifically said that there's just not enough people that are writing and actually doing that in-depth research the way that you guys do at Thrifty Traveler, the way that Tom and I do just for our own self, maybe not writing it all up. But there's more of this sell the sizzle versus understanding the intricacies of the program. And I think JT sort of said the same thing, where there's a lot at the high level, but not necessarily getting into the inside baseball stuff. Do you feel like that's a benefit to us? Or do you think it's putting a spotlight on the overall, you know, I'll say miles and point community? And even if they're not talking about the inside baseball, there's still enough people that are going to go down the rabbit hole like we do that eat up that award space.
That's a really good question. And I don't know that I have a full adequate answer for you, because I think a lot of this is still playing out right now. I like to try to remind myself that as large as this community seems, where you can run into people halfway across the globe in the Lufthansa first class terminal randomly, we are a small group. So I don't know if you guys remember, but you know, it was probably almost a year ago, Air France had this crazy mistake fare on award tickets between Canada and parts of France. I mean, pick your spot, as well as Croatia. I mean, they had some one-way business class fares for 13,000 miles. Oh, and by the way, you know, if you took a train connection from Paris down to, you know, southern France, you could actually do it for 1,500 miles. And it just lit up the corners of the internet that we all thrive in, right? And it felt like some of the biggest news we had all ever seen. And then, of course, Air France did what, unfortunately, many responsible airlines do. They canceled the vast majority of those tickets. And then eventually, the head of the Flying Blue loyalty program did an interview with Brian Summers, who writes the Airline Observer. And he said the number of tickets booked, not just canceled, but booked, was, I believe he said, under 2,500, which I think just goes to show you,
wow,
again, how small our world truly is. And so when you compare that to the hundreds of thousands of followers that some of these column creators, column influencers, whichever, that they have, you start to see where the incentive structure is there and why so many people who even a couple of years ago would be writing for sites like ours or starting their own websites or their own blogs are gravitating to Instagram because that's where the eyeballs are right now. I'm not saying that's right, but I do think that's a big part of what's driving this tilt towards more of the, let's just call it a generalist in award travel, rather than get into the weeds, find the sweet spots that nobody else is talking about, read the award charts, read the routing rules. There's just not as much time, attention, or money in that anymore.
It's an interesting point of view. And, you know, Richard Kerr, when he was on, you know, kind of made similar comments, you know, on our episode of a few episodes back, where he just pointed out, you know, for instance, on Built Awards, you know, just how few people actually do mileage based awards and how the majority of people are just, oh, I can just save some cash back and, you know, be able to pay for my drink at happy hour or pay for that, you know, unexpected bill that I needed to pay for. You forget sometimes with these credit card rewards and all these other things, sometimes, you know, that cashback reward is actually the most popular thing that people do. I know it a little bit dies in me every time I think about it, but when I think of, you know, the number of other better uses for that from a traveler perspective. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of the people who play this game, they're not always going for Lufthansa first class, by the way, drink. And they're not going for the always premium cabin. You know, sometimes they're just literally happy to be able to fly from Minneapolis to LA or something like that, or DC to, you know, Boston. And for that, that's a win.
You know, I'm reminded of the monologue in Quantum of Solace, the second Daniel Craig Bond movie, when they get Mr. White into this tunnel somewhere in, it had to be somewhere in Spain because they had, I think, bullfighting. They sit him down and M says, you know, who are you? Yada, yada. And he's like, we're looking over our shoulders thinking that you're around the corner and yet don't even know we're here. It just sort of feels like we're like in that Mr. White kind of feeling of, we think that people are in the Mile and Point community and are pursuing all these awards and everything, and that they're coming in droves and that they know as much as we know. And just to your point, 2,500 people on that mistake fair.
It's such an interesting perspective, you know?
Yeah. Because I know a lot of people that had probably booked 10 or 20. And so if you factor, you know, the multiples and stuff, that's really a very small population.
It is infinitesimally small compared to everything else. But these things exist together. You know, I think both this extreme of, you know, trying to squeeze every single cent and fly Lufthansa first class drink and book these crazy mistake fares exists within the same way that the people who pull the levers that make these changes, both at the banks and the airlines, as the people who are just redeeming for cash back or just using travel portals. And while I'm with you, TK, that's not what I want to be doing. There's also nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely not. Yes.
I don't want to discourage that.
No. If anything, it doesn't get enough airtime, right? Because the influencers don't find that as sexy, you know, or as, you know, clickbaity, some of these more mundane, pragmatic redemptions. But they're oftentimes just as exciting, at least from a maximized perspective. You know, some of these less exciting destinations, you know, those could be really where you're really stretching your dollar or your point, you know, from a redemption perspective.
Well, and if the purpose is, and don't get me wrong, I love maximizing the value as much as anybody. But if the purpose, if the goal is not just, I want to get maximum cents per mile here, but I want to have a really good trip, and that's the path of least resistance for a lot of people. I mean, to this day, one of my favorite trips I've ever taken was flying out to Las Vegas, renting a car, driving through Utah, and seeing the Mighty Five National Parks with my wife. That was the first big points redemption I had ever done. And I did it through the Chase travel portal. And I don't regret it for a second. I don't wish, man, I wish I still had those 80,000 Chase points and could book something else with it. It was an incredible trip. And that really did, you know, among other things, you know, now almost a decade ago, set me on the path that I am today. You need a win, even if it's small in the history of the things that you do in this world. You need a win to start to kind of chase down the rabbit hole and start to learn more of what you can do.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's what encourages you, right? Having whatever that dopamine is of like, ah, I paid points with this. This is amazing.
Exactly.
I do have a question. You know, I wonder if it's not the actual customers that are eating up all the inventory. Do you think there's a little bit of what's going on out there where is it point brokers? Is it just airlines preserving their inventory for sale or just being willing to protect the product and not wanting to give it out as mileage tickets? Do you think those are probably the real things that are causing some of what we see from an award trend perspective?
I think it's a little bit of everything. No question the concerns about mileage brokers and more broadly, let's just call it fraud, is driving, you know, some of the clamming up that airlines have done. We've also just seen a lean towards airlines restricting award availability to their own members instead of, you know, partner programs. You know, this has been old hat for Lufthansa with first class, Singapore premium cabins for the most part. But, you know, we've seen this spread to a lot of different programs. This time 5 years ago, you could readily book a Cathay business class ticket between the United States and Hong Kong through American Airlines or Alaska. That hasn't been out there for 3 years, basically since the start of the pandemic.
Oh, I miss it.
I really do think it has gone further than just airlines restricting partner award availability and into airlines straight up throttling American users, because this is the biggest game in town and it's not even close. I mean, if you look at a map and you were to talk about how many points are out there per country, I would bet you that the United States is somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 to 95% and everything else is just a rounding error. So, you know, we've seen silly things like British Airways gives better availability in on many airlines, not just their own, to members who have an account registered anywhere outside of the United States. And, you know, if you want to book a Finnair business class ticket between the United States and Helsinki, if you search and have your location set as the United States, you're going to see one seat at most. But if you just change that location to Finland or anywhere else in Europe, you're going to see two seats all of a sudden. I think we're going to continue to see this again as another sign that many airlines out there have wised up to just how much they're giving away to people who have a lot of points to play with.
I think one of the freeing things about this podcast is that I can admit that I'm an idiot or that I'm not quite as knowledgeable as some of our amazing guests, because I'm not. But I was not aware that Finnair was limiting to one if you were US-based. How do you circumvent that? Is that just using a VPN or, you know, are there other methods, just using the Finnair website in Finland or in transferring?
It's a completely foolproof safeguard. All you have to do is on the top right menu bar of the website when you're on Finnair.com, if you click your location and change it from the United States to Finland, all of a sudden you get to see two seats.
That's amazing. The simplest things. This kind of goes back to something that I think Sam and Robert talk about on the main Mileonomics show, is try things. And so like what you're saying with Finnair, I should have thought of that. I never did. But I used to do something similar with the Egypt Air. What I'd do is I'd go to the Qatar website for Egypt versus US, and you'd get Egyptian pounds. You'd have to do the conversion, but you'd often get a little bit cheaper if you were leaving Egypt to fly back to the US. You know, small little things that the, I'll say, quote unquote, normal person probably isn't going to try or isn't even going to think of.
This might be a good segue to start talking about what are some of the new opportunities? What's the good news out there? Because I think we've been a little bit Debbie Downer for the last 20 minutes or so talking about, oh, you know, here's all the nasty things that our airlines are doing to us because we're all points millionaires, right? But you know, the truth is, it's not all negative, right? There are some silver linings out there, as you kind of alluded to earlier.
I tried to warn you that I'm a pessimist, and here we are, 35 minutes into this podcast, finally. No, I am still optimistic, and here's why. There are two sides to this coin of how airline programs have reacted to just how awash we all are in points. You know, there is the pullback that we've seen from a lot of the airlines that we've talked about, but there also has been the opposite reaction. of airlines that are increasingly warming to the fact that this could be a pretty lucrative market, especially for airlines in foreign countries that cannot make nearly as much money as Delta, American, United, Southwest make on credit cards because the margins are just not there. The regulations are just not there to support it. So what we've seen just within the last 4 years is Air Canada has really opened itself up by partnering with Chase to transfer points, made a lot of moves within its mileage programs. I would say largely positive. I mean, we're going back 3+ years now, but still largely positive and relatively unchanged since to encourage people to earn those points, redeem those points, making it fun, gamifying it in a way. You know, we've seen Air France and KLM do largely the same thing. And, you know, the head of the Flying Blue program has straight up said, you know what? The United States credit card market is lucrative and we want that business. And that is why we are making some of the moves that we're making by standardizing the price of award tickets, whether you're flying in economy to Europe or business class to Europe. You know, we've seen the family of airlines under IAG, British Airways, Iberia, pulling more airlines into its orbit using Avios. So they've added Qatar within the last 2 years and more recently Finnair. There's no doubt in my mind that this is kind of the same play to broaden the appeal of these airlines and transferring points, buying points, opening their US-based credit cards. And then finally, just recently, a couple of weeks before we're talking here, Virgin Atlantic, despite all of the doom and gloom about what the words dynamic award pricing would mean, I would say it was, on the whole, really positive news. When you go from paying almost 50,000 points and, oh, by the way, $1,100 in fees for a business class seat to London, to all of the sudden seeing it's 29,000 points and it's only $250. Oh, and by the way, there's a 40% transfer bonus. So that 29,000 points is actually 21,000. I mean, these things do not happen by accident. And at this point, I think there's a very strong trend that airlines, not all of them, but an increasing number of them, are looking at this and saying, you know what, we're going to try this because there is something to this and it can work. You can offer people out there who are trying to redeem miles a good deal, engage with them in a serious way, and continue to earn their loyalty in their business. So I don't think this trend either is going anywhere.
I love these trends. And I, for one, was very surprised that Virgin actually went positively. I mean, you know, we talk about all these enhancements and seldom do they use the word properly. You know, I often want to say, I don't think that word means what you think it means, but Virgin definitely was. So I wanted to see if we could transition a little bit. You had mentioned your driving trip, your road trip. Are there any other trips that, you know, are really memorable that you might be able to share just, you know, a fun story or two from?
Travel story, perhaps.
Do I have a travel story for you? And are we in the right place? You know, there's a lot. One of my favorite things is taking the people I love to a place that I've been and sharing it with them and seeing new things, but sharing and showing them some of the old things that I had done on a prior visit. So, you know, I've been able to do this with my wife in Oman a couple of years ago. That was incredible. One of my favorite trips ever was going to Vietnam, to Hanoi and Ha Long Bay. And then just a couple of years after that, my friend and I booked the Hong Kong Airlines business class mistake fare for $650 because my wife didn't respond within 10 minutes. So I took my friend instead. And so retreading some of our previous favorite spots that I had been to with my wife, as well as exploring some new cities. And it's so much fun. But honestly, the things that stand out the most is really comes down to people, whether it's the person that I'm with or things that you experience once you're outside of the plane and outside of the airline lounge. So anyone who has talked to me about travel is going to hear me wind up to this and be like, oh my gosh, this story again. My first time in Hanoi, you know, we were out at this Bia Hoi bar. I was with my wife and her brother who joined us on this trip through Southeast Asia while he was teaching English in Japan. And so we were out at this local Bia Hoi bar, not a word of English in sight, Google Translate, not getting the job done. And so we're sitting there trying to figure out what to order for food and really even how to order, you know, these 15-cent glasses of beer. And this guy from Hanoi is sitting there on a stool across the table from us, chain smoking cigarettes and just staring at us. Not in a menacing way, but in a like, what do? Do I help out here? And so then after about 5 minutes of this, he leans over the table. He just taps at two things on the menu and gives us the biggest grin and a thumbs up. And so, you know, the waitress comes over and we tap at those same two things. We hold up our fingers for three beers, comes back. We get the food. We get the beers. Everything is, of course, amazing. And the same guy is still sitting there as we're eating. And he just gives us another grin, kind of a questioning thumbs up. We give him the thumbs up right back. I mean, to be able to communicate in that way without words, just with gestures, that's what it's all about.
A cultural exchange.
Exactly.
People are people, right? You know, people are people everywhere. You know that, and it's just funny how we can usually communicate even when huge barriers of culture and language might be in our way.
It's truly magic. It is. And that's why, I mean, again, don't get me wrong. Love flying the fancy seats. Love wringing every decimal point of a cent of value out of points. But if you don't have that, I don't know if I'm going again.
Trevor and I have made multiple attempts to go to Vietnam. We have been booked on multiple tickets to Vietnam at this point, and we have yet to somehow, it seems to be this mystical force that pushes us away, you know, from Hanoi or from Ho Chi Minh City or whatever, because the universe does not want us to go together, I think, to Vietnam. I have been a couple times.
Don't let the universe tell you no. Look, in the summer of 2020, my wife and I were finally set to take a trip that we had been planning for 3 years to go fly into London, to go up to the north, make our way to Edinburgh and fly home. And this was in August of 2020. And of course, that trip didn't happen. But then this Virgin thing came up a couple of weeks ago. And now we are going to London in August of 2025. Almost to the day, 5 years later. So just wait for a sign. The universe will not tell you no.
I love it. Yeah, the first time I tried to go to Vietnam, I cracked my head open prior to it. I couldn't travel.
Oh.
Yeah.
You listened to the universe wisely that time, I think.
Pompeian of death.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably a story for another time, but it led to one of my best friendships to this day. So the universe takes and the universe gives. So
I've been to Vietnam with that friend, by the way, but
but not me.
But not with you.
Guys, come on. Make it happen.
One day. I keep trying to convince him to go. And every time I try to convince him, he says no, because he's already been there so many times. And so I feel like I'm left to,
you know, last itinerary I checked, you know, I was the one booking us tickets to, I believe, through Ho Chi Minh City recently. So at the minimum, we were going to fly through, you know, Vietnam.
But we weren't going to stop. It's not the same thing.
Oh, I know. Fine.
You get a taste.
That's right.
And then you can't help but go back.
I don't know. He tried to explain that airport to me, and I just felt like that's not the kind of taste I want that's going to make me want to take another bite at that apple.
Yeah. Ho Chi Minh City, not the best airport in the world to transit at, but anyway.
No, it's not.
So let's pivot. I mean, this has just been a real fun conversation here. We've talked about revenue. We've talked about awards, the here and now, the good, the bad. We've talked a little bit about some fun stories. I love that Vietnam story. I mean, that is just like the perfect example of somebody who's, you know, of you guys embracing the culture, trying to go someplace that you probably had no business going and having that little bit of a mutual sort of exchange. I think that's just awesome. But let's pivot to outlook. So you see the trends. I think we've established you as an expert here, observing trends.
Don't let it go to your head.
Those are your words, not mine, just so we're clear.
Humble too. A humble pessimist. You can't get better than that for the question I'm about to ask.
If I put that on my Twitter bio, you wouldn't have invited me.
I don't think I actually looked at your bio. I just looked at what you tweet. So given all of your experience and what we've talked about today, we're approaching 2025. We usually like to start doing maybe not Nostradamus level forecasts or outlooks, but you know, what do you see happening in 2025? We've got that Hawaiian-Alaska merger. We've got maybe a Spirit going bankrupt. Maybe those aircraft become available, which could expand some other airline's fleet. We've got a lot of moving pieces. Make some predictions.
It's hard because those are big, important things to the people that care about them. And look, everybody should care about the well-being of Spirit, because even if you never set foot on a Spirit Airlines plane, you have benefited from their presence because they have lowered airfare across the country. And Hawaiian and Alaska are two major U.S. airlines, and their merger is going to have some major ramifications, whether you're talking about where they fly, whether Alaska is finally going to start flying long haul from Seattle to Europe or over to Asia, which I have no doubt they'll do, whether it's in 2025 or 2026. But, and here's the but, those airlines, in the grand scheme of things, in the United States airline industry, are kind of playing in the kiddie pool in terms of how the changes that they make affect the entire airline industry. I mean, if you look at how the capacity of those airlines stacks up against even just the likes of American, Delta, and United, it's not a rounding error. It's not significant either. It's somewhere in between. So I don't know that we're going to see broad ramifications for whatever is going to happen with Spirit. If it's only Spirit that files for bankruptcy and, you know, God forbid, can't get out of bankruptcy proceedings. And I don't know that we're going to see broad ramifications for what it means for travelers based upon, you know, how Hawaiian and Alaska end up coming together and what that airline program looks like and what that combined airline looks like as they really do harmonize or whatever you want to call it. I think the jury's out on what that means. And I'm just a little bit skeptical, right or wrong, about what kind of a broader impact that's going to have.
I got a question for you then. What do you think about change fees? Do you think they come back in 2025?
I don't think they do. I think in a manner of speaking, they're already here. The airlines have gotten a lot of free press, and it is, broadly speaking, a very good thing that airlines don't charge change fees anymore. Unless if you buy a basic economy ticket, in which case you either can't change your flight period, or if you cancel that, you get slapped with anywhere between a $99 to $199 fee. So the way I look at it, the way we look at it at Thrifty Traveler, is that change fees just have a different name, and they are the price differential between basic economy and a main cabin fare, which all of us are paying every single time we book a flight, because we want that flexibility, because the airlines have told us, and they're right, that that flexibility is important. So that means instead of collecting a change fee every now and again when one of us ends up needing to change a ticket, we're paying it on the front end instead. And that differential between a basic and a main cabin fare 5 years ago, pre-pandemic, was typically in the neighborhood of $50, sometimes $60 round trip domestically, and between $120 and $150 over to Europe, just for example. Today, that's more like $70 to $80 domestically in the United States, and $200 to $220 or more flying over to Europe. So I think they just pulled off a pretty great marketing spin campaign and just rebranded change fees.
You know, it's a really great point. I think Scott Kirby, either at the IATA World Conference or Global Meeting, whatever they call it, in Dubai, or at Farnborough, sometime in that June-July timeframe, had sat down with the air travel, oh my God, I just forgot what the podcast is, with, ironically enough, Summers, Ostrower, and Cranky Flyer. And he said that he got so much great press. They spoke so highly of removing those change fees that it sounded like he was never going to return them. And I think you just said the quiet part out loud of they don't ever have to return them because the fare differentials are so much that they'll do better every time. But, you know, of course, we're the ones that kind of abuse that, because we'll book award travel and then we'll be able to redeposit with no problem and then sort of go whichever route we want to. So, Kyle, let's pivot toward travel tools. In previous podcasts, we've kind of talked about some of the ones that are becoming our favorites and some of the favorites that have kind of lost their luster, so to speak. Airlopa has come shiny and new as opposed to SeatGuru. We've got Seats.Aero that I think a lot of us like. You know, there are some warts there, but by and large, it really does a lot more than I think what some of us old school people that used to just do all that searching manually. And then, you know, you look at Expert Flyer, where unfortunately, that poor tool is just a shell of itself. Are there any tools that you see as up-and-comers? Are there any tools that you see as just the golden or silver arrows in your quiver?
I do think Seats.Aero has probably emerged as the single best award search tool in the last year or so, which is kind of incredible given the volume of new search tools that have come out within just the last, not even 3 years. I mean, it's really two. We're in a heyday right now of new tools that are coming out. I don't think that there's a silver bullet. I also don't think that there's a replacement for doing this stuff manually. But if there's one that does the best job, I do think it's Seats.Aero. I mean, the ability to pull up that Lufthansa first class drink finder or the Delta One finder, Qatar Q Suites finder. There's a lot to like there on top of, you know, just the ability to search, and the pro membership is just so incredibly powerful to get a full year of availability. So that one, I think, is really top of the podium right now. And from my perspective, which is very biased, there's a pretty big gulf between gold and silver. But there have been a lot of other not necessarily award-related tools that have really emerged within the last couple of years. And to me, Flighty, the iOS app,
people swear by it.
It continues to amaze me. So I'll give you an example. Just over a month ago now, I was flying out to New York before heading overseas here from Minneapolis. And I was reading a book, you know, shortly after taking off, wasn't really paying attention. All of a sudden, I feel my phone buzz and I have a notification from Flighty that says, your flight has diverted to MSP. I'm like, what are we talking about here? I haven't heard anything. And it was a full 5 minutes later before the captain came on overhead and said, well, folks, the landing gear is not coming up. So we're going to head back to MSP and see what the issue is. So the fact that I was connected to the in-flight Wi-Fi and got that notification a full 5 minutes before I heard anything from the person who was physically diverting the plane back to my home airport is pretty incredible. I mean, the number of times that I've gotten notifications about delays, about cancellations, not just minutes, but in some cases hours before I heard anything from the airline itself is pretty incredible and invaluable. I mean, you guys know how important minutes can be when it comes to rebooking a flight, when you can make things happen before anybody else on the plane realizes that they need to change their plans pretty quickly.
Absolutely. You are in control of your destiny. And if you've got just a couple extra minutes, that's huge. I haven't used Flighty. After hearing that, I need to grab it. I'll put in one plug on Seats.Aero just because I kind of knocked Expert Flyer on some of their functionality. Seats.Aero is trying to move into that space. They have a beta for Fare Class Viewer, and I've tested it out. It's not perfect yet, but the fact that that's where they're trying to go really gives me a lot of hope for this tool. And I doubt that they're a listener, and I don't know their name off the top of my head. I know the folks that run it.
His name is Ian, right? Ian Carroll or something? The guy for Seats.Aero?
I will take your word for it, but my understanding is that Ian is a member of the Mile and Point community. So Ian, if you're a listener, we would love to have you on.
We got to make that happen, I guess, since we're saying so many good things about it as a tool.
we got to try. Yeah. So there is a tool, maybe a service is the right way to say it. So full disclosure, I end up paying for three different tools relative to premium deals. I pay for the flightdeal.com premium. And I just say that because, well, I'm not putting them in order, but the flightdeal.com is primarily just premium travel that is all revenue. And then I am a subscriber of both your Thrifty Traveler premium and Spencer's Straight to the Points premium. And I find the two of you find things that I'm not always thinking of. You know, I probably only get a couple, maybe more than a couple awards per year, you know, that each of the services find, but it helps me to expand my mind. And I can't remember how much, I'm sorry to say this, I can't remember how much I pay for, or how much you guys charge for the Thrifty Travel premium. I get enough value that the cost doesn't factor in for me. I'm not saying increase the price. I'm just saying you guys bring a lot of value.
Please don't. At least wait till I subscribe before you raise the price.
Guys, I got to go. I got to call my CEO. I got to tell him something really important.
Could you tell us a little bit about Thrifty Traveler Premium? I know that you guys have, and I have a hard time keeping track. I'm sorry. It used to be two tiers when I had gotten in, and maybe there's a third tier. Maybe I just need a primer. Maybe I'm just being selfish. Give me a primer and let our listeners just get the value.
Yeah, this is just an tell me what I'm paying for, Kyle. No, thank you. And honestly, we all love to hear what you just said, which is not that you want to pay more, because we don't do that, but that you feel like you get value out of it. And not just from the stuff that you book, but maybe more importantly, from the stuff that you don't. I mean, before I started working here, I myself was a subscriber for years and didn't book anything, because the value was less about, oh, here's a trip I want to take, and more about like, oh, so that's what a flight from Minneapolis to Honolulu can cost. That's really good to know. And, you know, as we started branching out more and leaning more and more into, you know, award travel, oh, that's a way that I can book that flight to Vietnam. I wasn't aware of that. I mean, the value of the education, even for deals that don't immediately suit your travel plans, that's pretty huge. And we hear that from a lot of people.
Absolutely. Super helpful.
I mean, Canada's a perfect example. I don't think of Canada off the top of my head, or used to not. Now, if I can't find my home airport, I'll look for like JFK. And if I can't find JFK, then I'm looking up north of the border.
Which is a great move, because there's a lot more award space out of Toronto, out of Montreal, even Vancouver these days than there is out of many of even the biggest US hubs. So, you know, having that in front of you is the difference between finding something that works and just kind of throwing your hands up and saying, you know what, maybe this wasn't meant to be. No, so Thrifty Traveler Premium, and this is the part where I tell you that I'm just a guy who writes words on the internet. I am not the person that is finding these things. We have a team of people that are digging into award space very shockingly manually, day in and day out, to find this stuff and digging through revenue fares to find the price drops and the great deals to send out to our members too. So I got to give hats up to John, who runs our premium service, Peter, Katie, Gunner, the rest of our entire team, Jared, who started the service, you know, going on 7+ years ago now. There's a lot of great tools as we've been through. There's a lot of other services out there, including Spencer, who I'm a big fan of, and I'm a friend of Spencer's. But I'm pretty proud of what our team has built, because we find some really cool stuff. So today we have really just the Thrifty Traveler Premium. So you sign up, you're able to pick from, you know, as few as just your one single home airport. You can pick a handful. You can pick all 230 plus airports that we now find flight deals from, including up in Canada as well as the United States. And we send you the best of the stuff that we find every single day, including increasingly award availability. So, you know, just in the month of October, we sent 40 award travel deals, and the vast majority of those were for premium cabins, because that's what people want now. The appetite for those kinds of deals has grown exponentially just within the past couple of years.
I need to go fix my settings.
I think you're converting some customers or some new prospects here, because, you know, that sounds really exciting. You know, I know for me, you know, having that inspiration, having the muse to be able to say, oh, I need to start looking at these areas of the world because, hey, there's some opportunity there. That makes a huge difference, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, for us, you know, it's the destination matters. But, you know, sometimes for us, you know, sometimes we can be easily steered. So oftentimes, you know, getting the right idea, you know, for a place, you know, sometimes will ultimately result in a trip more than, you know, us having, you know, the nucleus or the start of that trip, you know, somewhere else where we decided ahead of time, yeah, it's going to be this location.
Right. Well, you know, the beauty, just for an example here, is even if your heart is set on Italy, if you get, you know, an award space alert to Amsterdam, Paris, even Madrid, even London, that gets you the bulk of the way there. And then from there, it's really easy compared to, as Trevor said, kind of to kick off the show, just how hard it is to leave the States sometimes looking for that single thing that you really, really need. I mean, if that's not there, if you get 90% of the way there, you got to jump on it, right?
Trevor only flies on unicorns. That's why. Unicorn Air, you know, Trevor's airline of choice.
While we're there, John, Peter, Katie, and team, Australia awards, that'd be awesome. Just throwing it on your radar.
and 321T award alerts. I think that's your new, these are two new areas for Thrifty Traveler Premium to focus on.
Now, I can promise you we have sent those. What I can't tell you is that we haven't sent those in a while because
I remember seeing them last year. I had an itinerary booked. I booked part of the itinerary literally on the tarmac as we were turning onto the runway to depart Lima, Peru. I booked one way. And then I think the way back, I booked like a month later after Labor Day. The problem is we just couldn't do the trip last year. So trying to replicate it a year later is non-trivial.
No, that must have been a hard one to have to dump because you know something special when you're able to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we like to try to keep some of the pod or most of the podcast evergreen. But I don't want to leave our listeners having to go hunt down a website, which we'll include in the show notes. Do you know off the top of your head how much Thrifty Traveler Premium is? Not to put you on the spot, but well, to put you on the spot, just so they don't have to go hunting when they decide to flock to your service.
Yeah, it's $99 a year currently. So as long as you're listening to this at any time, let's just say close to when it's released and probably thereafter, it's $99 a year currently.
And I just want to be clear, we don't get anything for highlighting any of the services. A lot of people do affiliates in the community.
Yes.
We get no affiliate revenue. We just love the services and we highlight what we use ourselves. So Kyle, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate your time, Kyle. And if you could just let our listeners know how to find you.
Both of you, thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast watching you drink every time I say Lufthansa first class drink. Has been a highlight of the month of November, certainly, if not 2024 as a whole.
He's really maximizing us, you know, having, you know, put that back as the drink, you know. Where's Melbourne in all of this, you know?
Hold on a moment. I have to refill my glass.
This is the second time.
This is relatively new, too. Like, you know, the Lufthansa first class is really making a strong comeback.
Yeah.
Cheers to you, Kyle. I do believe we've had Lufthansa first class drink more times on this podcast than probably in a half a dozen of them.
This is taking the record. It's taking the record, I'm pretty sure.
A man's got to make a mark, you know? No, you can find our whole team's work at thriftytraveler.com. I'm at kpottermn, as in Minnesota, as a true homer on pretty much all of the social platforms, particularly on Twitter.
It's hard to follow that. So I think we're going to call that as the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.